Trunnion had been regarding his fair vis-a-vis attentively. He remembered that night in the library, it was a vivid memory. And her present distress was not lost upon him. He adopted a properly sympathetic tone as he replied, "I'm awfully sorry for you, but I must tell you that unless we discover the belt actually in Miss Douglas's possession, we shall not prosecute." The lady's lips tightened. "How do you mean in her possession?" "Well, unless, for example, she has it on her person, or we find it in here," tapping a green leather bag which lay on his desk. "But why should it be in there?" The question was put in all artlessness, and Trunnion stifled his smile. "Because this is her bag," he said patiently, "and because I acted on your information and secured it from the cloakroom at King's Cross. Curiously enough, somebody else had been trying to get it."
"Marjorie herself, no doubt?"
"I should say not. If she had tried, she would have got it. Besides, she left immediately after the robbery for Devonshire. She wrote to you from London, you remember, telling you that she had gone on in a hurry, leaving her bag at the cloakroom. At least," he said carefully, "that is what you told me." "Oh no, the lady who was trying to secure this bag was a veiled, mysterious person, so mysterious that the attendants refused to hand it to her without the ticket. I got the bag today in order that it might be opened in the presence of interested persons." Trunnion fixed his eyeglass a trifle more firmly in his eye, and pressed the electrical bell upon his table. "I think we had better try to unravel this matter. You are pretty confident that the belt is in this bag?" A shadow crossed Anna Winley's face, but it passed in a moment. She could hear the thump, thump of her own heart, could feel the process of age that drew the skin of her face tighter, and deepened the shadows beneath her eyes. Yet she was apparently her easy, nonchalant self again as she drawled, "Dear Mr. Trunnion, how can I be confident? I only tell you of my suspicions. All that I wish to do is to assist justice." "I think you may be able to do much in that direction," Trunnion assured her, as he turned to the man who answered his ring. "Ask that lady and gentleman who are waiting to see me to come in, please."
"Very good, sir."
Anna started up from her seat suddenly and crossed the room to where Trunnion sat. She laid her hand on his arm. She had not expected this. "Mr. Trunnion," she said, "I don't want—" But whatever she had in her mind to say was not spoken, for at that moment two people were shown into the room. The first was Marjorie. She was very pale, and her deep blue eyes were wide with distress. Her pretty mouth had a downward droop, like that of a tired child, and her lips were not quite steady, though she pressed them bravely together. Trunnion, with his quick smile, welcomed her and pushed forward a chair. She certainly did not look a thief, nor did she bear the stamp of infamy, which, as Anna had hinted, was part of her family heritage. Ronald Gray, tall, soldierly, and more angry than distressed, followed her. He paused abruptly as he caught sight of Lady Wensley. "Anna," he said, "you here?" His voice was charged with contempt. The fleeting expression of sullen rage which had marred her beautiful face a moment earlier as the two had entered the room vanished like birds before a storm. She smiled sweetly at him and utterly ignored the girl. "Yes, of course I'm here. Where did you expect me to be?" He looked at her impatiently. "Why have you come?" he said sternly. "Surely not to repeat the lies you pretended to believe at Wensley?" Marjorie laid a pleading hand upon her lover's arm.
"Ronnie, please. Please say no more."
The girl's words and actions seemed to fan to flame some smoldering passion in the beautiful woman as she turned her eyes angrily on the girl.
"Please, please," she mocked.
"Oh, don't beg his forbearance, I pray you. Let him say what he wishes. There was a time, Ronald, when, but do I need to remind you of what time? I see you remember." The man's eyes involuntarily sought those of the young girl, and as he answered the elder woman he pleaded to his fiancée. "I remember much that I wish I could forget," he said very gravely. But Lady Wensley had no intention of accepting the rebuff. "How like a man," she said almost gaily, "isn't it, Mr. Trenyon? Men wish to forget their own follies, and women find their chief joy in remembering them." Marjorie's eyes were fixed on her cousin's face. "Anna," she said, "I have come here to answer the charge you have brought against me." Anna stared at her. My dear, good girl, I bring no charge." The girl's face went a trifle paler under the insult of the older woman's manner. "Why? That is my bag," she exclaimed suddenly. Trenyon nodded, and his voice was gentle and reassuring as he replied. "Yes, it is your bag. I have taken the liberty of exercising certain embarrassing powers which I possess to claim it." Ronald, who had listened impatiently to the exchange between the two women, could no longer control himself. "But this is monstrous, it is an outrage," he broke out. Then he looked across at Lady Wensley, who stood all the time with a little scornful smile upon her face. "This is a plot," he accused her. "If it is a plot," said Trenyon soothingly, "I shall find out all about it, you know. I've got quite a reputation for finding things out. The commissioner says I'm more like a magazine detective than a policeman. Now let us get to facts. The belt was stolen, the Queen of Sheba's belt. I'm sure, Lady Wensley," Trenyon favored her with his most friendly smile, "that dear lady would turn in her grave if she knew that her golden corsets were the subject of an inquiry at Scotland Yard. It was stolen, no doubt about that, and on the morning it was stolen," he turned again to Marjorie, "a maid saw you, Miss Douglas, leaving the Rogers' rooms." "I can explain," said Marjorie quietly. "One moment." Trenyon's voice was as gentle as ever. "The explanation given is that you had the room immediately above the Rogers, and corresponding in every way, mistook the floor, entered the Rogers' sitting room by mistake, and came out immediately." "That is the truth, a simple explanation," Marjorie answered him. "Oh, very." The words were from Lady Wensley, and her tone implied all that her words left unspoken. "Lady Wensley, your tone is insulting," said Marjorie, rising indignantly, with tears of anger in her eyes. Again Trenyon interposed, but Ronald interrupted roughly. "The whole thing is absurd. Suppose Marjorie had stolen it, where on earth could she dispose of it? How could she smuggle?" Trenyon's smiling protest interrupted his anger. "I think it best, don't you, if we have no interruptions?" he said smoothly. "Now, Miss Douglas, did you ever see this belt except on the occasion when I was present?" "Never," said the girl decidedly. "Or handle it, except on that occasion?" "Never, even then I did not touch it." "You did not by any chance carry it away inadvertently, caught it in your wrap or something?" "Oh, no, that would be quite impossible." "Why?" Trenyon spoke almost sharply. "Because I was not wearing a wrap," the girl returned. "How absurd, Mr. Trenyon," Lady Wensley interrupted impatiently. "How would she carry it away in her wrap? Why, it weighs over 6 pounds. Miss Douglas apparently does not retain a sufficiently vivid impression of the fact to realize this," said Trenyon very quietly, then to the girl, "who packed your bag?"
"I packed this bag."
"What is in it?"
"Nothing of importance, that is why I left it at the cloakroom."
"It is pretty heavy." Trenyon lifted the bag gingerly. "There are some books in it." The girl showed signs of weariness at the apparently useless questions, and Ronald came to her aid. "Marjorie has been perfectly open and straightforward, Trenyon," he said hotly. "It is a disgraceful thing that such a charge should be leveled at an innocent girl." Lady Wensley looked at him scornfully. "If you are going to be heroic, I shall be bored," she said. "May I look at your pictures, Mr. Trenyon, do you mind?"
Pray do, Lady Wednesley, said Trunnion politely, but you'll find very little to amuse you, I am afraid.
I assure you it takes very little to amuse me, is not that so, Ronald?
She was fast losing all sense of caution. Only she knew that she had thrown something away with both hands, had been prodigal of love, of happiness, of life.
Ronald Gray looked at her smiling face almost sorrowfully, and made no reply. The smile died from her lips and she turned her back on him abruptly.
You have no objection to my examining this bag?
Trunnion put the question almost deferentially.
None whatever, said Marjorie, but I am afraid I have no keys with me. I left them behind at Plymouth.
Oh! Trunnion's tone was noncommittal.
Of course she wouldn't have the keys, Mr. Dot Trunnion. Lady Wensley turned from her inspection of the pictures to make the remark, and of course they would be at Plymouth, 200 miles away.
Ronald faced round towards her.
Your malignity is pitiable, he said in a low tone.
You grow more and more like the hero of melodrama every minute, she retorted calmly, and then as though dismissing him from her thoughts she pointed to the weighing machine.
What is this thing, Mr. Trunnion?
He started.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Lady Wensley. That is a balance. I've been conducting some experiments.
Really, how positively cheeky, I wish you would wait me.
Her enthusiasm was almost childish, and as Trunnion hesitated, she stepped onto the weighing plate and repeated her request. It was the desperate expedient of one who desired time, the very of one who desired time. The very freakishness of it took the commissioner off his guard, and he crossed the room obediently.
This is not business, you know, he said reproachfully, as he carefully adjusted the weights.
Captain Ronald took advantage of the interruption to gently lay his arm upon his fiancée's shoulders. He spoke reassuringly, caressingly, but there was infinite pain in the man's clear gray eyes.
Marjorie, you have nothing, nothing to fear.
She slipped her hand into one of his and moved a little nearer to him.
You do not doubt me?
I'd as soon doubt my mother. If I doubted you, life would be a bitter, empty thing. You are the beginning and end of life to me.
There was no doubting his earnestness and the girl smiled up at him gratefully. The smile faded as the thought of Lady Wednesley intruded itself.
Yet I am so afraid of her, Ronald, there is something sinister in her assurance. She behaves as though she had me in a trap. There is a triumph in her voice, in her look.
Oh, Ronnie, I am afraid, afraid.
9 stone 12½ pounds. The assistant commissioner's voice broke in on them.
Is that good or bad?
It can be nothing but good in your case, Lady Wednesley, said the courteous Trunnion.
I don't know what that means, but I am sure it is meant to be nice.
She played with the weights of the machine as Ronald claimed the other's attention.
Trunnion, Miss Douglas is quite willing that you should cut open the bag.
That is good of you. But it is not at all necessary, replied Trunnion with a smile, taking off the telephone receiver.
We are always prepared for,
hello, hello, give me 16X.
Yes, is that 16X?
AC speaking.
Sergeant, send me up some keys, a lady's dressing bag.
Very ordinary type.
Thank you.
I shan't keep you a minute.
He hung up the receiver and turned to find Lady Wednesley at his elbow.
Mr. Trunnion, she spoke very softly, there is something I feel I ought to tell you.
Yes, said Claude in a matter-of-fact tone.
She looked significantly at the others.
Alone, she said briefly.
Marjorie rose immediately and turned to the door, and with the stiffest of bows Ronald Gray prepared to follow her.
Lady Wensley advanced a little towards him.
You don't mind, Ronald, do you? She said plaintively, I shan't tell him a word about us.
Ronald apparently did not hear her.
He held the door open for the girl and they passed out of the room.
Trunnion was consumed by a strangely sudden interest in the papers on his desk.
It was well that he did so, for Lady Wensley's face at the moment was not good to see. The next moment this stifled little cry caused him to look up. She had both hands to the lace at her throat. She swayed a little. He was beside her in an instant. "Are you ill?" He reached for the bell. "No, no, don't ring, I'll be better in a moment, a little water, just a little water." "Let me ring, Lady Wensley." "Please don't, it will pass. I am ashamed of such weakness." "Can I leave you? I'll go myself for the water. Are you sure you will be all right?"
"Yes, yes."
"I won't be a moment." Trunnion went hurriedly from the room. He was really concerned. A woman, unless she was absolutely normal, invariably troubled him. The closing of the door had an extraordinary effect upon Anna Wensley. She stood suddenly erect. "Queen of Sheba's belt," she murmured. "Did she feel like me?" She walked swiftly to the door to be certain it was shut, and then came as swiftly to the table. She spoke breathlessly now, as though the low-spoken words urged her on to complete the work she had to do. "Did she hate a woman and pray for her death? I wonder, a woman who had stolen her love from her. Answer that, my Queen of Sheba's belt." Her fingers fluttered rapidly down the buttons of her loose tailor-made coat, and as it fell back something glittering showed against the dark of her gown beneath, something that shone and sparkled as it clasped her waist with its setting of gold. She found a key hanging on a long chain round her neck and hastily unlocked the bag on the table. In an instant the glittering thing from her waist was in the bag, and she snapped the fastening down. Trunnion, entering the next moment, found her still in the drooping attitude in which he had left her, and he hurried to her side with the water. "Are you better? Do drink this." She took the glass from his hand and murmured some words of thanks. "I am so sorry, but you know I am not very strong." "Thank you so much, I have been an awful nuisance to you." "Not at all, do you feel well enough to tell me?" She put up her hand to stop him. "I think I won't if you don't mind, after all, it is hardly fair, I have only my suspicions, you know. The girl can't help being poor, can she?" He looked at her sharply. "Well, as you please," he said. Then a light knock sounded on the door. "Come in." "Ah, Cole, with the keys. Please ask Captain Gray and Miss Douglas if they would kindly come in again." Trunnion stood jangling the keys together till the man had gone, then looking at the bag, he asked Lady Wensley. "You think she stole it?" "Well, what am I to think? I hate to be uncharitable, but all sorts of things happen in society, as you must know, dear Mr. Trunnion." She paused as Marjorie, followed by Ronald, entered the room again, then went on in her drawling tone. "I hope you won't keep me very much longer. I've 3 calls to make and I must leave town by the 12:45. Trunnion answered her. "I do not think you need wait at all, Lady Wensley," he said. She frowned. She was being taken too literally. Nor did she like Trunnion's office manner. "I can spare another 10 minutes or so. I will wait till then anyhow," she said. He selected one from the bunch of keys the man had brought him. "I think this is a likely one, Miss Douglas. Will you open it or shall I?" "You open it, please." Trunnion tried the key he held in his hand. "This fits. Hello." He looked up with a little frown. "Doesn't it open?" asked Marjorie. "I can't tell yet." Trunnion put his hand to the bell. "Yes, it is open. One moment before we look into it. I want to ask my man a question." Then to the man, who had just come in, "You brought this bag from King's Cross yourself?"
"Yes, sir."
"Have you had charge of it ever since?"
"Yes, sir," repeated the man.
"Did you notice if it was locked when you received it from the cloakroom?"
"It was, sir."
"Are you sure?"
"Perfectly certain, sir. I brought it straight to the divisional superintendent and he tried it." Thank you, Cole, that's all.
I only wanted to find out, said Trunnion to the astonished three, to, well, just to make sure. He looked at the bag again but made no move to open it.
Well, the impatient exclamation came from Anna Wednesley.
Trunnion looked at her as if he was thinking of something else.
Well, I hope it is well, he said at last, and he opened the bag.
Just inside was a filmy lace wrap, and in silence he lifted it. The Queen Sheba's belt lay shimmering between the folds of lace.
My God! Ronald Grey turned an agonized face to the woman he loved.
Ronnie, I am innocent. I know nothing, nothing about it.
Grey took the half-fainting girl in his arms and comforted her with little choking words. He was dazed and bewildered, but he did not doubt her.
As for Trunnion, this scene might have been enacted 1,000 miles away for all the notice he took.
I don't think I want this badge anymore, he said calmly.
Anna looked towards him eagerly. What are you going to do? Your duty, I hope?
You never can tell, said Trunnion vaguely.
You will arrest her, you must, you will.
There was no mistaking the passion in the woman's voice, and Ronald turned on her almost savagely.
Anna, have you no heart? Can you not show a little mercy? She is innocent.
My God! You know she is innocent.
She laughed, a little rippling sound which expressed real mirth.
My dear good Ronald, voila! She pointed to the belt.
Trunnion interrupted her.
I think if you would talk to Miss Douglas, Ronald, possibly there is an explanation. Try and get her to remember the circumstances.
He turned to Lady Wednesley and appeared to be making conversation to gain time for the now weeping girl.
10 stone 12.5 pounds, he said lightly. That's a respectable weight for so dainty a person, Lady Wednesley.
It wasn't 10 stone 12, Mr. Trunnion, said Anna, adopting his tone. It was 9 12, you know.
His friendship at this moment, when every remaining spark of goodness in her flamed to light to uncover her sin, was especially comforting.
10 12, I think, said Jimmy.
Don't be stupid, Mr. Trunnion, I can prove it. Come here.
She stepped on the weighing machine and Trunnion slid the weight upon the steel arm. Then he turned to the lovers.
Have you found a possible explanation? He asked.
I can offer none.
I didn't think you would somehow.
He put his hand on the bell.
Ronald Grey was as white as the girl by his side.
What are you going to do? He asked.
I am going to send for an officer.
Ronald.
Marjorie clutched his arm.
Lady Wednesley's drawling voice jarred in upon them.
Dear Mr. Trunnion, I think it is awfully splendid of you. I know just how you feel, but one owes a duty to society, and all that sort of thing, and duties are most painful things.
They are, said Trunnion unsympathetically, very painful.
Then to the attendant who had just entered, take this bag to a cab for Miss Douglas.
He crossed the room to where the lovers stood and taking the girl's hand in his, said kindly.
I am so sorry to have given you so much bother. Go and finish your holiday in Devonshire, it's a delightful place.
Why, aren't you arresting me? Said the startled girl.
Trunnion smiled.
No, why, do you want to be arrested?
But the belt, I must be cleared of that dreadful charge.
Oh, you're cleared all right.
Cleared?
Yes, you don't suppose I should send you off if I thought you were guilty? I catch her.
And the overwrought girl reeled and would have fallen but for Trunnion's timely warning.
She pulled herself together and forced herself to speak.
I'm all right, only it was a little sudden. She smiled pitiably.
How can I thank you, Mr. Trunnion?
Please don't, go off and thoroughly enjoy Devonshire.
But Lady Wednesley had found her voice.
Mr. Trunnion, what does this mean? I will not be a party to this perversion of justice.
The assistant commissioner smiled crookedly.
Don't bother, Lady Wednesley, you're not.
Marjorie, I'm sure your cab is waiting, do not let us keep you.
He almost hustled them from the room and turned to meet the fierce stare of the woman.
You shall hear this, Mr. Trunnion.
She was speaking quickly, painfully. She saw the undoing of her plan, which, hateful as it was dear to her. She walked swiftly to the door and would have passed through, but he stood before her.
Do not go for a minute, I beg, Lady Wednesley. The cool young man's voice was smooth and persuasive.
You will not persuade me, she raged. I shall go straight to the nearest newspaper office and tell the story.
Ah, then you would lose your train, said the imperturbable commissioner.
Be advised by me, go straight to Wednesley and forget this miserable affair.
How dare you offer me advice?
She was almost incoherent in her anger.
Of course, I see your object. You have good reason for wishing the matter forgotten. But if there is a law in England, she shall suffer. You shall not hush up this affair.
As a matter of fact, I am not really keen on hushing up ordinary crime, but this is no ordinary crime.
He picked up the belt from the table and weighed it thoughtfully in one hand.
Here is the belt, he pursued, a nice heavy belt. You must have found it very heavy.
I? Why? What do you mean?
You wore it thing morning, you know, when you came here with it round your waist. You knew that Marjorie's bag was here, because you wired me to secure it, and because all other means having failed you, you hoped for an opportunity to put the belt in.
How dare you?
But the assistant commissioner went on as though she had not spoken. The opportunity came when I went to get you a glass of water. You made one mistake. You did not lock the bag after you.
Oh, this is infamous, gasped the enraged woman.
Prove it, prove it.
You cannot.
I can prove everything, but there are some things we don't want to prove.
You shall pay for this insult.
Lady Wednesley, listen to me. His voice was firm. He had dropped the tone of badinage. For your innocent amusement, and at your request, I weighed you when you came in. You weighed 9 stone 12 and a half. For my own information, I induced you to be weighed again, after the belt was found.
Ah! A look of terror came into the beautiful, insolent eyes and he continued.
You weighed 9 stone 6, you had lost 6.5 pounds in less than a quarter of an hour.
Lady Wednesley, this belt weighs 6.5 pounds.
What a fool, oh, what a fool! The words were whispered rather than spoken, and the terror in her eyes deepened.
It is very simple, isn't it? Said Claude suavely, but I repeat, there are some things one does not want to prove.
You wish to catch the 12.45, I think, Lady Wednesley.
Well, you'll find your way out. You needn't wait for coal. The stairs are at the end of the corridor.
Goodbye, so glad we have been able to arrange things. Hope you will have a pleasant journey, charming day, isn't it?
He watched the unsteady figure till it had turned into the side corridor which led to the stairs, then he came back to his desk, and stood looking down at the belt.
From things, women, he said. Queen of Sheba, Anna Wednesley, all rum.
The end.